more of Lake Effect Now on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. We talk about music every month with internationally renowned cellist Robert Cohen.
It's a segment called On That Note, and it examines the life of a working professional classical musician.
This month, I was curious to know how he approached learning a new piece of music. Even though he's been playing professionally for many years, that doesn't mean he's played everything that's ever been written for the cello.
You know, music was being written for cello from the 1700s onwards. So there's still music that I haven't played. So sometimes I'm learning a piece that's been around. As you say, it's not a new piece. And I'm familiar with it. I've heard it, but I haven't actually learned it in preparation for performing. So the process is a little bit different from when you start a piece that nobody's ever heard before, maybe a piece that's actually been written for you. So there's no recording, there's nothing on the web that you can find. So I suppose the thing that you're looking at is a kind of map. It's a bit like reading a book when you look at the score. And when you have experience, you can read it as though it were words and it's and sounds. So when you're looking at the dots on the page, they actually start to sing in your head and you can understand the music from the way it's built. But of course, that's really coming from a very experienced point of view. But nevertheless, when you look at it, it's full of indications that the composer has given you. They write lots of things like basically how fast the music should be. So a tempo, you know, like a heartbeat, is it going to be fast music? Is it going to be slow music? They'll write indications in words like vivace, which would be fast. And a lot of the things are in Italian. So it would be adagio, which means kind of gently and slowly. And so you're looking at those indications. Then you're looking at the key that the music's written in. And that is really vital because music reaches us in a way dependent on the key that the composer chooses. So if you know anything about music, if it's in C major, like the middle note on the piano, if it's in C major is a kind of easy character key. It's hard to imagine, but each key has a different character. So if you move from C to D, D major is very bright. And if you move up a little bit to E flat major, it has a kind of darkness to it.
I think of warmth when I go into flat keys.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you go into minor keys, well, then I always think, for instance, that Mozart will choose, you know, or even better, Bach, if you say D minor. It's very tragic. And it's interesting that music can affect us emotionally so differently just because they choose very specifically the key they want you to hear the music in. And of course, that key is then related, closely related to a lot of other keys, different ones in C major than it would be if it were in D major. So you're getting a kind of map in front of you. Say it's in C major, say it's written in, it's adagio, which means slowly. And then you'll see that it's written in three beats to a bar, which means the lilt is 1, 2, 3, 1, 2,
the waltz.
Three. The waltz.
Yeah.
That might be a bit too fast for adagio, but just to give you an example. Whereas if it's in 4, you get a very different feeling, or in 2. So that will give you an idea of a kind of the landscape of it.
And you haven't even picked up the bow yet.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This is just looking at the score.
Yeah. And you're looking at a lot of it at a time. So you're looking, for instance, if it's written for cello and piano, you'll be looking at the music which has both parts. Parts, the piano part, the right and left hand, and above that in the score will be the cello part. And so you're looking at also the conversation that's going on between the two instruments. And you compare that to an orchestral score where you've got, you know, 50 different instruments, and you're looking at a very complex map. But let's just, for argument's sake, let's look at the cello and piano. So you're looking at this kind of map. And you can see that it's starting to then get complicated. It starts very simply, maybe, and then gradually you can see the development in the music. But you need to look at that. You need to have a sense of the architecture. Are you walking into a nice little cottage, or are you walking into some huge grand scale of a building? You need to know that in order to approach the music in the right way. And then maybe you start from the beginning. You look at the beginning. You've seen those things that I've mentioned. And then you look at how are you going to play that first phrase, like a sentence? How are you going to play it? In other words, how are you going to find a way on the cello to play those notes in very basic form? And there are lots of different ways of playing those notes because we have four strings and you can play many of those notes on the top string or the second string or the third string. It just depends which position you want to play them in. I know a lot of people play the guitar, for instance, so they have a chance to choose to play those first four notes on a lower string or a higher string. And of course, then that choice will be about the color of the sound because the higher strings are brighter than the lower strings. But maybe you're looking at this in mind of the kind of character you think the music might have, but you're sort of guessing to some degree. It's sort of singing to you in your head, but until it all really comes together, you can't make any big decisions. So you make temporary decisions about how to play. So you'll find ways to play the first line of notes on the cello, and that would be the left hand and the right hand. And then once you've heard it that way and you've felt it and you start to pick up in a way the resonance of the music, the way the sound feels, just like listening to a song. Is it a sad song? Is it a bright song? And
does it change in the middle? Yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. how quickly it changes. Mm-hmm. And then once you've heard it and felt it, you can go back and make some adjustments to it. And then when you've made some adjustments to it and you kind of think, I think I'm getting the idea of what this is about. But of course, it's only the first sentence of the book, so you can't know that much. So you move on to the next section and you work that one out, figure out how you're going to play it, look at the score, see how what you do relates to the piano part. And then you play the first two sentences together and it starts to make more sense. And you just basically work your way through the movement, the first section of the music. And then, of course, you've got to deal with sometimes very complicated technical things where the composer's written things which are really, really difficult to play. They take quite a bit of sorting out. But again, with experience, you learn how to kind of solve the problems quicker and quicker. What I find now is that I do most of my sorting out in my head. I don't use the cello to resolve problems, things which I know are very difficult. From experience, I can say, I can see the solution here. This is how I'm going to have to do it. Once you are able to play kind of fluently through that section, you know, still you're not playing the music with the pianist, with the piano. So you're kind of alone, but guessing how it will feel. Then you start to understand the music better and start to interpret it, as to say, you know, when I first looked at it, I thought it was kind of gentle and then it was building this way and it was quite sad here. This bit was exciting. But, you know, now I see it in more depth. I understand that that was just, you know, the superficial version of what's really going on. And there are details within what I've been doing which are much more important than I thought. So you kind of zoom in and you get closer and closer to the point where you're really evaluating how each note affects you. And music has that power. The change from one note to another, Mozart being the genius of all time, can break your heart. Or it can make you jump for joy. Just the switch from one note to the next note. When you're learning the music, when you're experiencing it and getting the feel of it, you have to be really aware of how you are reacting to it. Because, and I think this is the most interesting thing about music, it's about animal instinct. You know, you're literally feeling the music because something in you just responds that way. And you put your ideas together and you put them into the instrument and the instrument resonates and the air moves and the air moves with their airwaves to the listener. And the listener absorbs it, I think something like 70% through their body and the rest through their ears, and then they react in their own way. You can't be trained to respond to music, people very often think that, you know, they should know about music and they should know, especially with classical music. They come backstage after concerts and say, that was really wonderful, but I really shouldn't say anything because I don't have any training. And I always say to them, no, you are the audience. You don't have to be trained. That's our job. We're the ones who have to learn how to do it all and how to put it together so that you can just react in whichever way you want to. And they do. It can be life-enhancing. It can be, it can really put them off. It can upset them. They can be shocked. Whatever. From moment to moment, everybody has. You're kind of aware of this when you're giving a concert, that you look at the front row and the first person there, they can have a completely different reaction to the music to the next person along. And that's sort of the beauty of it. It speaks to everybody in their own way. But when you're learning the music and when you're training yourself, you have to sort of put yourself in the place of the audience in a way and just listen to it and react spontaneously, because then you're kind of on the same wavelength as the audience. And after all, you're playing music for them.
When you're learning a piece and you have that reaction that you're trying, you know, you're trying to be both audience and the musician, what happens when you don't particularly like what you're experiencing, when you don't like a piece of music or a particular phrase in a piece of music? How do you deal with that?
Well, one has to put in an extra effort.
And I would imagine so. You can't like everything equally.
No, and sometimes you're playing a piece of music and you just think, oh my goodness, this is so unbelievably wonderful, and every phrase of it is extraordinary. And then other times you're playing and you're thinking, you know, let's just get through this. But then, you know, your instinct kicks in and you think, well, if you think that, if you feel that way when you're playing, for sure the audience is going to be bored out of their minds. So it becomes your job to challenge, really, to try and find what really is interesting in that. After all, not everybody likes the same kind of music. So just because you don't happen to like something, you know, very strongly, doesn't mean that somebody out there isn't going to absolutely adore it. So you suddenly find you owe it to everybody, and you owe it to the composer to look more carefully. I'll give you an example. You know, the first time I played some minimalist music, which was a piece written by Morton Feldman, a cello concerto, and nothing happens. So you play incredibly long notes for a very, very long time, and nothing seems to be changing, and you just wonder what people are going to think. And gradually, you start to realize that that has something itself. It has a stillness that gives you time to drift somewhere else. I mean, I was playing this and rehearsing it and practicing, and I found myself, my head, moving up into the sky somewhere. I felt I was in space. So the music was away from the earth. It was really up there, not in the heavens, but like, you know, ethereal music, but really in the middle of space where you can't tell what the gravity, and there's no gravity, you can't tell movement so easily. And I have to say, in the end, I was completely convinced. It's just another type of music. And it demanded such a lot from me, because I'm used to that really passionate, romantic, you know, driving, delicate, all the kind of constantly changing things that go on in music, which really stimulate me. And I love that. And suddenly I was without it. But then I discovered that was enormous amount in the music that can be understood and appreciated, which is so different. You know, going back to my point about understanding your instinct about the sound that you're making and how it might be perceived by others, and just picking up on the music in such a way that makes it really understandable to you. Because I think the most important thing as a performer is that you're convinced of your ideas, even if it's just for now. And this is actually the problem with recordings and why it's so hard to make recordings, because the moment you finish, you think, you know what, I think I've changed my mind. I think I'd like to do it another way now.
Which, of course, you can if you just make another recording.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. Well, Robert, as always, it is such a pleasure to talk to you, and we will catch up with you next month.
Thank you very much.
Lake Effect contributor Robert Cohen is an award-winning recording artist, conductor, artistic director, and cellist for the Fine Arts Quartet. He spoke with us as part of our regular monthly segment called On That Note with Robert Cohen. And that is all the time we have today. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich, thanking you again, as always, for tuning in today.
Join us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect. It's all from listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee.
Stay tuned. Fresh Air comes your way next. It's 11 o'clock. ¶¶